Well, I appreciate the opportunity to join you today to talk a little bit about what we're doing with the Soil Health Partnership as a way to engage our farmers to talk more about soil health and agricultural sustainability a little bit more broadly. The project itself is directly focused on soil health, and it's been it's an initiative of the National Corn Growers Association that's been in place for about almost 4 years. It started in 2014. And it started as an initiative to help our membership base across the National Corn Growers Association really understand the linkages between measurable soil health indicators, crop yield responses, economic profitability, and environmental responses as well. And so what we've learned in the project, and I'll talk more about this, is through talking about soil health and setting up the research infrastructure to assess soil health on farm, we can address ag sustainability questions as well. So that's the context that I'll be coming from and talking about how we built the network, where we're at today, and how we're looking to apply the data collected across the research network that we're conducting on farm to broader ag sustainability questions. So first, it's thinking to our farmers, thinking about our membership base, the National Corn Growers Association. We have a few over 40,000 members that pay membership dues each year, and we also represent the interest of 300,000 checkoff paying corn farmers nationally. So when we hear from our farmers, we're trying to put it in their context, within the agronomic system context. So we can think about, in the off-season months, the risk, how do you manage risk as you're moving into that next growing season? What are the marketing opportunities for your crop? How do you make those marketing decisions based on the market fluctuations at the time? Do you want to go GMO? Do you want to go non-GMO, plant a waxy corn? Do you want to? What do you want to do to optimize your marketing opportunities? And then how do we utilize the best decision enablement tools for that individual farmer along with their advisor, the agronomist, at the same time? So we move into the growing season. We know that adaptive management is a huge part of what we do when we're growing crops. We enter the growing season with our best plans, and we throw them up into the air. What we're looking at is all these different components that we manage differentially within an agronomic system throughout the year. Often many of these decisions are being made at the same time. And so what we're trying to understand is how do we look across these decisions on the upper left-hand side of the screen, the nutrient management side, the labor, the weeds, the diseases, how do we look at those and better understand how they might be affected by our soil health indicators, and then also affect our soil health indicators that we can measure, and ultimately at the end of the day for our farmers, what does this mean for our crop yield response, our resiliency in the crop yields, the profitability, or more appropriately, maybe return on investment, so as we're investing in that system, and then environmental risk at the same time. So we're looking at this through the context of the Soil Health Partnership, and we know we're only one piece of a very, very big puzzle, and I'll follow up on this in the next slide as well. And we're working more in the development space, applied research on farm, trying to understand how to translate the research from the more basic research that others like the Soil Health Institute is focusing on, others like our land grant universities, our federal researchers as well. So how do we apply that? That's where we're looking in that development space. And there are others that look at how do we integrate this in broader parts of society, thinking again more about the ag sustainability discussion. How is this applied by our ag supply chain? How do our consumers engage with the ideas, the concepts that we're talking about as well? So we're trying to understand how do we create linkages while not overextending ourselves at the same time. The bigger picture for the Soil Health Partnership, over the last 4 years, we formed many collaborations across a diversity of organizations. We have our growers in the upper left-hand corner that have engaged and really raised their hands to be part of the program in a very collaborative way. Volunteering their farms and their effort to be part of the program that I'll talk more about in terms of data collection and communications. We have land grant universities, we have community colleges, we have federal agencies, we have conservation organizations like the Nature Conservancy, Environmental Defense Fund being part of this as well. And we also have ag industry getting involved in a big way. And to me, this excites me to see this many different organizations participating, engaging in a collaborative way. And these are all tangible collaborations. This isn't merely just talking back and forth about how we might share messages. This is putting on joint field days. This is putting out press releases. This is social media campaigns. These are joint protocols that we're utilizing and implementing to collect additional information. So it is exciting to see this engagement, to hopefully add a little bit more consistency within the marketplace to soil health messaging and ag sustainability messaging as well. our support for the partnership is diverse as well. I mentioned a couple of our partners, but the National Corn Growers Association, they serve as administrators for the program. Along with that, we have industry support through Monsanto and the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, and then technical advice from our conservation organization partners in the Nature Conservancy and Environmental Defense Fund. And we've seen other diversity in funders coming in to support the initiative to better understand how we can support our farmers on the ground by working with through the commodity organizations, and these would be the Walton Family Foundation, NRCS, and General Mills. So what are we doing? What are we thinking about? As we set up our research engagement structure, our communication structure, we have a few strategies that we're thinking about in terms of how to engage with the farmers. And this is where maybe this is a little bit different than some other programs. We're really going to think about the farmer first and that agronomist at the same time to put together a value capture statement for each individual farmer, each individual agronomist, any partner or collaborator we're working with in the space as well. Unless we're doing this, we're going to be hard pressed to get a response from our farmers or agronomists unless we make it work for them to really see the investment opportunity for their own farm or their clientele base. It's going to be hard to get engagement if we start with an ask rather than an offer. The engagement and buy-in is directly related to that. We want to think about shared messages, shared objectives that we might be working with across our farmers, our agronomists, our other collaborators. How do we incorporate these shared objectives into our own mission to better leverage strengths across the collaborations that were listed up here earlier? And then building institutional knowledge, we know that we need to communicate and educate in a very consistent way. And we know we can't reach everybody, and this is, again, where we're working with collaborators like the Soil Health Institute, like others in other sectors of our society more broadly. And then ultimately, at the end of the day, how do we better participate to create shared resources for better and more consistent information for our farming community? So what are we doing on farm? When we work with an individual farmer, again, we walk up to that farm and put together this value proposition, this offer to the farmer to engage in the program. And a lot of this is based on the knowledge that farmer is going to get about their own operation. How do we improve efficiencies? And we know with commodity prices being as low as they are, profit margins as tight as they are right now, that these efficiencies gained and better understanding of their business opportunities, this is going to be really important. And this is also a way to think about how do we engage farmers for collection of data that might be applied more broadly to broader ag sustainability discussions. So put it in the context of the agronomic system that our farmers are working through day to day, and then from that, solicit information that might be beneficial to other discussions. But first and foremost, it's got to be relevant to the farmer and agronomist at hand. So the way we collect information, we set up a replicated randomized strip trial in a very standardized way across every farm in the network. So we set up, it's usually in the form of three different types of treatments, and these are guided by a science advisory committee to help us ensure standardized approaches across the network. So every single one of these dots on the map is set up the same way. And we collect the information, the data, in the same way, with the same methods, going to the same labs, using the same aerial imagery, the same yield analysis responses or methods. So we set up the strip trial based on what the opportunities are for that individual farm. Are the cover crops going to help alleviate a limiting factor in that individual field? Or is it a tillage issue? Or is it a nutrient management issue? It's getting to know that farmer and that agronomist and understanding their opportunities for success. So we set up the sampling scheme. We come through, collect a lot of soil health and routine and fertility assessment information, stratified information through soil sampling, return that information directly back to the farmer in a way that's going to be very relevant and useful for them immediately. Come through the rest of the year, collect crop growth and crop health information throughout the year, apply this geospatially to look at the layers over time, again, make it directly relevant and applicable for that individual farm. Come through at the end of the year, and let's start thinking about how we're going to assess our yields and then our profitability by collecting the input and management practice information for that individual field. At this point in the year, we can think about that same input and management information that's going to be utilized to interpret the results for that individual farm. That same information is going to be the same information that might be utilized, say, in the field-to-market field print calculator or other sustainability assessments. But we don't ask for it. We provide value for the farmer to want to volunteer that information through the trial system that we put in place. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we need to figure out what is the economic response as well. So what have we built over the last 3.5-4 years? We started out kind of with a hope and a prayer in 2014. Had about 20 sites enrolled, one staff member to manage these sites. 2015, we doubled the size of the network. It was about 40 farms, mostly cover crop, no cover crop type trials. 2015, we also brought on staff to help support this. 2016, we added another 35 farmers to the network. We were at about 70 farms total across the states listed up here. So we had a little bit more diversity in the trials we were implementing in the standardized way. And now at 2017, as I look back at the network, our original goal was to enroll 100 farmers over a period of 5 years of time. We were 3 years in and we had 111 farms enrolled in this network. And that's a testament to the farmers volunteering their time and wanting to gather information across this network, to look across this broader data repository to understand how they might really assess better opportunities for their farms, and the agronomists engaging at the same time. Who are these farmers that we're enrolling? What are the types of farms that we're enrolling? We're trying to enroll representative farmers. We think the opportunity is to enroll representative farmers and understand transitions to new practices, not necessarily the farmers who have adopted cover crops or no-till or advanced nutrient management strategies for decades at a time. We want to see what the changes look like with current ag technology, with current market opportunities, things that way. So most of our farmers are enrolled in the network are pretty representative of the geographies they're in. As you might expect, looking at the states that we cover in the upper Midwest, we have a corn-soybean rotation up there. Our farmers are no different. We see some diversity in a small chunk at the top, but most of our farmers are the corn-soybean rotation. As another indication of this, we can look at our tillage. As we look at federal data or other survey data to understand who our farmers are in different geographies, we're trying to mimic that with this network to enroll, again, those representative farmers. Most of our farmers are not no-till farmers. They have plenty of opportunity to understand the benefits from reduced intensity in tillage. And so we're trying to work within those systems to help them understand what these opportunities might look like. And what have we collected over the last 3.5-4 years? We've collected a lot of soil samples. Year over year, we're starting to collect a pretty big repository of data across representative farms to get an assessment of where our farmers actually are at and how we might contribute to the broader body of scientific knowledge when it comes to soil health information. And so these soil samples, as you can see year over year, 2015, we collected about 2,500 samples. 2016 came in, we about doubled that. You can see our rate of growth there at over 117%. 2017, we had about 8,400 samples collected this year alone across this growing network. And this is, again, a testament to the farmers and agronomists wanting to be part of it, to put their time into an effort like this, recognizing that the returns might be a couple years off for this type of information. So you can see the growth across the states. I apologize, the legend is very small. The blue line in the middle, that's going to be Illinois in terms of samples across the states and over time, so how we've progressed in the states we're in. Indiana, you can see that's the orange line, so we've seen that significant growth there. Iowa, the same way. And then our satellite states, those would be all the other states that aren't the I states, and we've seen growth there as well. it just got a little bit cumbersome when I split those out, so I apologize for that. Happy to contribute that information if those states are ones you're from. So what are we seeing from yield data responses as well? So within the figures that I'll have, I'll just pull them all up. Between 2014, 15, and 16, we're working to collect georeference yield monitor data. And that would be represented in the actual yield point columns within 2014, 15, and 16. And then we're working to round that out as we're working with our farmers to collect additional information, because oftentimes it's hard to collect this information in real time. So we're utilizing other techniques like NDVI estimates for yield responses to extrapolate and fill in the gaps as we're working to collect the georeference yield monitor data and the calibrated yield monitor data. And over time, we've had a similar growth pattern here as well. So now we're starting to look at a repository of soil samples coupled with aerial imagery, coupled with our georeference yield monitor data. So we can add these spatial layers over each other with the scientific backing or that statistical backing, the experimental design we're using, it provides a little bit of rigor to it. It's on-farm research, it's messy, but it is standardized across the entire system. So what are we doing with it? I don't have a lot of results to share with you yet because our comparisons year over year are a little bit limited just given where we started in 2014 and how we've progressed over time. But what we're starting to look at, we're starting to use some multivariate analyses, principal components analyses, putting together 3D biplots to evaluate correlations, looking at year-over-year responses in different soil parameters, looking at different yield parameters as well. Again, I don't have a lot to share today. Our hope is that as we come to these meetings next year, we would have a fair amount of comparisons to make year-over-year as we're looking at all these parameters that we're collecting in the network. And again, we're applying this to soil health, we're applying this to yield, to productivity, economics, but they're the same questions we can ask in the broader ag sustainability landscape. How do we continue to produce our food without jeopardizing the efforts of our future generations? And so the information, it's, again, directly relevant to the farmers and their business operations at hand, but we're working to think long-term and collect the information in a way that's beneficial to the farmer first, to get them engaged first, and then apply the questions on the back end. Where do we need to go into the future? We know we're only one piece of a very large puzzle. We need to work to build additional relationships. And the relationship management piece of this program is essential to its success. We wouldn't be where we are today without the relationships, the very collaborative nature of what we try to implement through the Soil Health Partnership. And this is oftentimes, again, working with individual organizations, understanding their objectives, their motivations, and finding out ways to work together. That's going to be a huge part of this moving forward. How do we think about development? How do we think about broader institutional knowledge? We know our farmers get a lot of information and recommendations from industry right now. Are there better ways we can feed information, create better feedback loops with a developmental mission and vision in mind to better inform the development processes for commercialized products, tools, services that our farmers might use? And then how do we educate more consistently across the ag landscape? How do we return information back in a very usable and tangible way so that we can better engage and have reliable conversations, make reliable recommendations for better business management strategies, and then ultimately feed that up through those integration processes in other parts of our society? So with this, I'll pause here. Happy to take a couple questions if I have any time, Madi.
Sure, yeah.
I'm gonna appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, we have time for some questions.
Yes? That's a great question, and I apologize. I didn't mention that earlier. So the question is about are we expanding to livestock systems or is this crop specific? So the farmers in the network, we don't dictate that they plant only corn and things that way. It's looking across rotations. Each individual farm is enrolled for at least a five-year period of time, and there is incorporation of manure and livestock systems within that. We haven't moved into grazing lands or anything that way. That's a little bit outside of our wheelhouse, but happy to share ideas and concepts that have worked in the row crop sector that might be applied.
And Nick, are you recommending, on the cover crop specifically, are you recommending a blend of seeds, you know, like a prescribed seed, you know, blends between monocots and dicots?
The question is regards to recommendations we might be providing up to this point. We don't provide a lot of recommendations at a blanket level. We know the opportunities are very farm-specific, field-specific, and even subfield-specific. So it's before we would go to that level to say plant all cereal rye or plant an oats radish mix, it's better trying to work with individual farmers to understand what those opportunities are, or train agronomists or other service providers, seed people, or others in the network, across the network, so that they might understand how to better incorporate those factors in making recommendations. I don't know if that helped.
There's another question.
Can you talk a little bit about how you guys are defining soil health? Because a healthy soil for one field is not necessarily a healthy soil for another field in a different state. Like, what parameters are you guys using? Are you guys using a soil quality index? Like, I guess a little more detail on that.
So we stuck with the NRCS definition, and I should probably defer on that question to the next speakers that we have, because they're going to probably cover that in incredible detail.
I want to hear you answer.
Oh, do that. We're in data collection mode. We're working with others right now, understanding their regionally contextualized answers to that question.
Any more questions? Another question.
I'm just curious as to why you saw a decrease in farmers in Indiana
so
compared to the other states. Like what?
In terms of soil samples?
No, in terms of that one.
This
why,
one?
Why is it? Oh, when the results. Oh, yeah.
So that's just representative of the number of farms we had in Indiana was stagnant. We didn't include, we didn't enroll additional farmers in Indiana.
Was there a reason why more farmers were jumping off the program, or?
It was a resource issue. We just weren't able to enroll additional farmers there.
Yeah.
It wasn't because of interest from the farmers. There was definitely interest.
I was curious. Okay.
But yeah. Well, thank
All
you.
All right. Thank you.